So no further cuts to defence spending. That was the promise from the Defence Minister, David Johnston, during a major speech today. He did, however, say that some of the department's prime real estate might be sold off. He also said that the Defence Materiel Organisation, this is the organisation that's basically responsible for buying military equipment and buys our weapons, that that organisation is going to face staffing and budget cuts. The Minister wasn't available to speak to us this afternoon. We are joined by his opposite number, David Feeney, Shadow Minister for Justice and Shadow Assistant Minister for Defence. David, thank you very much for joining us today.
No, my pleasure, Willie. How are you?
I'm very well. This suggestion that Defence Materiel could do with something of a haircut, even if not Defence generally, what's your response?
Well, I think it's worth remembering that DMO is an organisation of about 6,500 people. It's about 14% smaller in terms of people today than it was in 2012. It's also worth remembering that about 20% of its people are actually from the Australian Defence Force. They're in uniform. I guess it's commonly said that there's room for improvement there, but I guess what we're interested in hearing from the Minister for Defence and from government is, I guess, more answers than the questions they've thrown up into the air today.
But they seem
where are these cuts going to come from? The Minister today talked about redeploying personnel into industry. How's that going to work? How much is that going to cost? And as you said in your opening remarks, this is a government that put its hand on its heart and said there'd be no further cuts to defence. Today we're hearing about cuts to defence.
Well, no. What we're hearing about is cuts to a particular part of defence. That money, if it's liberated, can be spent elsewhere, perhaps
That's
on actual
theoretically
equipment
true, but it was
like
reported
that.
In the front page of The Australian today, in a government leak, if you will, that some of the savings, and now I'm quoting, some of the savings might also be used to boost the push for a budget surplus. So that's not reinvesting in defence. That's reinvesting in the whole of government.
On the issue of the DMO, though, what was quite interesting in the material that was released today or reported today was that the DMO has produced its own blueprint, like its own rationalisation, and it has basically admitted that it is overstaffed. So if that's the case, surely it should be uncontroversial to say that there must be savings to be made there.
Oh, I think it's uncontroversial to say that reform in the DMO is a continuous process, and that's really been underway since the organisation was first formed in 2005. But I guess in opposition, we're asking some questions about how that's going to be actualised. We've just seen in the United Kingdom a similar government program fall over. £30 million spent to explore changing the United Kingdom's defence procurement process, and eventually that arrived at the conclusion that the kind of ideas David Johnson's talking about here in Australia just don't work. In fact, we saw a former Tory Defence Minister, Lord Lee of Trafford, suggest that the government-owned contractor-operated model was dead in the water. So we are concerned that this is a government that's looking for ideological inspiration from a Conservative government in the United Kingdom that's actually abandoned these very ideas.
Well, we can't call it ideological, though, when the organisation itself admits to being overstaffed. The question that raises, surely, is if they knew they were overstaffed, and your side of politics when you were in government were looking for cuts to defence, why did you not look here?
Well, I think I think that's precisely what we did. This is the workforce of the DMO was shrunk by 14% over the last 2 years. This organisation, the work of this organisation was done by 10,000 people in 2005. It's done by 6,500 today. So this is an organisation that has got leaner and has got hungrier. I'm not suggesting that process is concluded. I'm not suggesting that further reform isn't possible. But I am intrigued about how moving these public servants and military personnel into the private sector from their current places of work, how does that realise savings? What does that do to how these projects are managed from government? What does it mean in terms of contractual arrangements between defence industries and government? And there are always innumerable security issues around the work these people do, often in very important and very expensive projects. So there are a lot of questions here for David Johnson, and I repeat, these ideas, recently explored in the United Kingdom, have just fallen over, and we are concerned that there are a whole lot of ideas being piloted here by David Johnson in Australia that have not survived first contact in the United Kingdom.
Given the budgetary situation and the fact that savings do need to be made somewhere, and the point that Joe Hockey made of a structural deficit that we basically have now, given that fact, and given that Your side of politics was prepared to cut defence, and in fact this side of politics that's currently in government was trying to quarantine defence from any cuts.
Well, if I can interpose just there, because that's not precisely right. I mean, in the last Labor budget, we committed $113 billion over 4 years to defence, and we promised that we would try and increase that spending to 2% of GDP as soon as practicable. The Liberal Party have come to government with a precisely the same policy. They've also pledged that...
I understand that, but what they said was they would provide no further cuts. But given that you had been cutting, if they were to find additional savings here, would you really be in a position to criticise them?
Well, absolutely, because they came to power saying there would be no further cuts to defence. That has formed a part of their rhetoric, that has formed a part of their political case. We have a Prime Minister who constantly insists that he's going to keep all of his promises. Why should this one be different? He says that he's not going to cut defence. If he does precisely that, then he's breaking his promise to the electorate.
Might just talk about what happened in Senate estimates today, in particular the Manus Island Detention Centre scenario. I know this is not directly your portfolio, but I wouldn't mind getting your thoughts on it just while you're here.
Sure.
There have been all sorts of reports started to come out of the Senate estimates hearing today that have been reported in the press, whistleblowers coming out suggesting all sorts of things that were wrong with the way the detention centre was operating, G4S and the way they conducted, this is the security organisation that looks after it, and the way they conducted this and lost control of the situation completely. Isn't it impossible for Labor to escape some of the blame here if indeed blame is found on the part of G4S?
Well, let's go to first principles here. Before we can blame anybody, let's have an independent inquiry into actually what went on. In due course, Waleed, you may well be right, but at the moment we're trying to pierce a veil of secrecy, where we have a minister and a government that aren't prepared to tell the parliament or the people of Australia what actually transpired. A minister who had to walk back from his, we now see, outrageous remarks earlier in last week, by creeping out on a Saturday night and telling Australia the truth, or at least something approximating the truth, at a moment in time when he knew it would be very little reported.
Well, let's be fair, there's been a bipartisan policy of secrecy surrounding detention centres in the immigration system.
I don't accept that.
How many journalists have been allowed into immigration
centres? The Minister for Immigration put out a press release.
No, hang on, but if you're talking about serious transparency, you'd be able to have journalists go in. That's never been allowed under any form of government. There has been secrecy around this portfolio right from the beginning. The point is, surely, that as a matter of principle, that Labor must accept, if there is blame to go around on G4S, Labor must accept a portion of that, given that this is a program that started with them.
Well, I guess in the aftermath of an independent inquiry, you can call the opposition onto your program and put that to them. But I guess my point I'm making to you is that in the absence of an independent inquiry, an inquiry we think is required here, in the absence of that inquiry, our task is to try and pierce the veil of secrecy. And I don't accept your point. I think that we have seen this government adopt a systemic line of secrecy, which is quite unprecedented. We have a minister who will not answer questions, who insists that matters attract an operational secrecy that they have never attracted before. And we will continue to ask the government hard questions about that, and we will continue to say that when these kinds of events happen, as they did in Manus Island, that there should be an independent inquiry and that the minister and government should be able to tell the parliament and the people of Australia what actually transpired, rather than, we now see, rushing out, describing events that actually did not occur, describing conduct that may not have occurred. This is quite an outrageous incident. It reflects very miserably on the minister, but it goes to the darker and deeper truth, which is that this is a government committed to not telling the Australian people what's going on.
All right, we'll find out. We have put in bids, I should say, for the Immigration Minister, Scott Morrison, but as yet we've been unsuccessful in trying to...
Well, I'm sure he'll insist that it's a matter of operational secrecy.
Well, I don't know about that. He's talking about it. It's not necessarily that he's not talking about it at all. There's the question of the accuracy of the statements, and that's another issue, but we'll come to that if we get a chance to speak.
Well, he certainly wasn't talking about it at all in question time.
I do want to talk about one other issue that was raised in Parliament today. The Manager for Government Business, Christopher Pyne, moved a motion in Parliament to apologise over the statement of the former MP Craig Thompson that he made in Parliament a couple of years ago, where he's defending himself against allegations that he misused union funds. The opposition, I should note, supported that motion, but here's Christopher Pyne talking about it.
I'm grateful that the opposition is supporting this motion, Madam Speaker. I'm very grateful that they are. But I wonder if by supporting this motion, they are indicating, they are admitting that they got it wrong for 3 years while they defended the member for Dobell.
David Feeney, let's take it as read that you have a criticism of this as a political stunt and move beyond that. Mm-hmm. The substance of this point, surely he has a point that this is an admission of wrongdoing on the part of the Labor Party.
Well, I think the Labor Party's position here is that it has changed because we're now dealing with the aftermath of a trial that has concluded. As we've seen, Craig Thompson was found guilty of the offences that he was charged with, and that matter has proceeded through the courts in an orderly and proper way. And in the aftermath of that, the Labor Party joined with the Coalition today to make that criticism of him. I think, however, it's completely consistent that the Labor Party, and indeed I would say all decently minded people, remember that there is a presumption of innocence in our legal system.
Well, yes, there's a presumption of innocence. There were quasi-judicial findings already in operation at this time.
Well, I don't recall that. Which quasi-judicial... talking about the Fair Work Australia findings?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but that's not a finding that attracts criminal sanction. And I don't think it can be argued that on the basis of that he'd been found guilty.
Well, no, I suppose they're findings of fact and we have to place weight on them to whatever extent
we feel. And eventually they become a matter for the police and then they become a matter for the court.
As we've seen. Thank you very much for your time, David Feeney. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Willie. Thanks very much.
Shadow Minister for Justice and Shadow Assistant Minister for Defence, David Feeney. I should point out there are stories in the US about cutting defence spending. Who would have thought that we'd have an era where this was what was going on? But anyway, it is upon us. We'll be looking at that in the second hour of the program, so hang around for that.